Good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and opening up this Friday night at 8 p.m. in the Marjorie Lyons Playhouse is a combined theatrical effort featuring the Drama Club at LSU Shreveport, along with Centenary College's Department of Theater and the Mahogany Ensemble Theater. They'll be combining forces in a production of Clyburn Park, a novel, or a play, I should say, by Bruce Norris. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios are director Robert Alford, an associate professor of media and arts at LSUS, along with Mary Jarzebeck, who directs the lighting and the costume design for this production, along with Kelly Vaden, who is going to be playing Becky in Act 1 and Lindsay in Act 2 of our show. Robert, Mary, and Kelly, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So let's go into the background. Now, this play was written as sort of a spinoff, if you will. The term, I don't think, had yet been phrased in 1959, but this was written as a response to A Raisin in the Sun. And this kind of comes at it from a different perspective. So could you talk a little bit about Raisin in the Sun and then what this play is talking about?
Sure. Raisin in the Sun was the first play by a black woman on Broadway. It's one of our major American plays done in 1959. And I've directed it three times, actually, but it's a signature play of African-American theater and American theater in general. It's inspired by a part of her childhood where, as a young woman, her family was one of the first black family to move in an all-white neighborhood, and that inspired her choice in other things to write this play. What happened in real life was a lot uglier than what happened in the play.
Right.
There's more positive outlook in the play, Raising the Sun, than there was in her own life.
Yeah, and then Sidney Poitier, many will remember him as playing in the movie.
He was also in the original Broadway production. In fact, he was a star before the play came out, and they had a hard time getting money to put it on Broadway, but he agreed to do it.
Okay.
That's what put him over the top.
That would bring in the money, wouldn't it? So now let's go into this play and give us a little bit of the historical background about how this comes about.
So this play was written, in the early 2000s, and it has two acts. The first act is set in 1959, the same year that the play debuted on Broadway. In The Raisin in the Sun, it says anywhere from 1946, which is the end of World War II, to the present.
Right.
But he said it specifically in 59, the year the play was on Broadway. So that's when the first act takes place, and the second act is 50 years later, 2009, okay, all in the very same house in Chicago.
So what's happening in Act 1 in 1959 to give us the scenario and the plot?
Sure. Well, basically, the conceit or the idea of Clyburn Park is it's the neighborhood, Clyburn Park is the neighborhood that the family in Raising the Sun is going to be moving into, and the whole play takes place literally in the house that they have purchased.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, part of what the play really wrestles with is why would this family choose to be the first family to sell a house to an African-American family. So,
right.
So Act 1, you see the people living in the house as they're preparing to move out, and their conflicts with some of the neighborhood people, as well as the woman who works with them and her husband. So there's seven characters all together.
Right. So really, in A Raisin in the Sun, it's all about the black family moving in
mm-hmm.
and people trying to convince them, bribe them, do anything
right.
they can do to keep them from moving in
right.
because all of the white folk are basically afraid, our property values are going to drop and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now they go to the white family that's actually selling the home
right, exactly.
and are trying to pressure them to give folks an idea of the connection here.
Right, right.
And who are our characters in 1959?
Well, there's a family that lives there, which is the Stoller family. So that's Russ and Bev. They're the owners of the home. And then there's their maid, Francine, and her husband, Albert. And then there's one character who's actually in Raisin in the Sun who is in Clyburn Park. His name is Carl Lindner.
Right.
And he's a character who, as you mentioned, bribes the family in Raisin in the Sun. Tries to bribe the family, but they eventually turn it down. But he's a character in this play, as well as his wife, who in the play is hearing impaired.
Okay.
And there's also a minister who comes by to counsel the father. And that doesn't go very well either.
I can imagine. Now, Kelly, what role are you playing in this first half?
I play Betsy Lindner, Carl's wife.
Okay, and so you're hearing impaired?
Yes, and I think that really adds to the depth of her character because she's just so sweet and she has such a childlike innocence that's enabled by her hearing impairment.
Right, so she doesn't have to hear all of this caterwauling, if you will,
exactly.
and all of the ugliness coming out of her husband and others who are trying to convince this family not to sell to the black family that was featured in A Raisin in the Sun. And so how do you approach, Are there lines for a hearing impaired person?
There are. And I think it kind of makes her the comic relief in a sense, because when the tension starts building, she says something and it's just kind of funny a lot of times. But she does pick up on the emotions of the other characters, and she's just not really sure what's going on. It's actually giving me wrinkles, because a lot of time I sit there and my facial expressions are just like, what's going on?
Oh, well, you'll have to have those painted on so you don't get real wrinkles, you know? Theater will age you if you let it. So how are we staging this 1959 home? Is this going to be, you know, the old black and white TV in the corner, or what are our set designs, and what are the props that bring people back? Because that's the whole point of stage design and set design, is to make your mind fill in the imagination.
Well, Don Hooper over at Centenary is the actual set designer.
Okay.
And he has put together a beautiful, simple design, got some beautiful arches going on, and keep it minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Alfred has an antique now radio that,
okay,
that we will be using. And this particular staging, I like the fact that Don and Robert have kept it very simple, because that leads more attention. That leaves more attention and to the dialogue, to the emotions,
right,
to the acting. And you have to also remember, we got people moving out and people moving in, mm-hmm, so it kind of took the onus off of coming up with too much furniture,
right,
and set pieces. But I like the minimalist approach to this, because it's really going to focus on that very important message that the playwright's trying to give to the audience.
Right. So you have an old antique. I have an old antique radio from the 1950s. Yeah. Still has tubes in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have one too. I wouldn't sell it for anything.
My TV is almost that old. I still have a cathode ray tube TV.
Oh, wow.
So
do
if you need
you
to borrow
really?
One,
yeah. Oh my goodness, I've got to see that one.
So let's flash forward to 2009, mm-hmm, and obviously they don't have an old tube type radio in their home and a cathode ray tube TV. Mm-hmm. So tell us what is happening now in 2009, because this is a whole different problem with the racial neighborhood issues that have gone on in America historically, mm-hmm, for hundreds of years.
Right.
You know?
So it's the very same house, but 50 years later. And in this case, the house has been abandoned for some time, and a new family is moving into it. Actually, the family that the actors who play the owners of the new home are the same actors who played Mr. Linder and his wife in the first one. So there's a lot of parallels in the play between the first act and the second act. That's one of them. But the neighborhood over the time, the implication is that when the younger family moved in the 59, eventually a lot of the white people moved out and it became an all-black neighborhood. And now, some 50 years later, because of people having long commutes and various other reasons, there are a lot of white people moving back into the neighborhood. So at the point when the play takes place, well, it was a mostly black neighborhood for maybe 40, 45 years, is now a mostly white neighborhood. And the real contention in the play is that the family has bought this home because of structural differences and things like that, have decided to tear it down. And so the conflict, you don't really find out what the conflict is in the way this play is structured until about halfway through. So it's a lot of cultural differences and complications, and confusion is a big theme of the play. But the real thing is there's the two black characters from the first act, or the two black actors from the first act, are now trying to prevent this new family from tearing it down, the home, because it just means a lot to them. So the other connection between Raisin and this one, Mr. Leonard's in both plays, but also the black woman character in the second act, her aunt is Lee Younger, who is the matriarch in Raisin and the Sun.
Okay, so really we're talking about white flight was the issue, mm-hmm, in 1959.
Right.
Black family moves in, everybody, mm-hmm, says, oh my lord, mm-hmm, they move out. And of course, mm-hmm, you know, part of that is they abandon their homes or leave them or, mm-hmm, sell them for less than what they're worth.
Right.
Anything to get away from, quote, the black family. Now we have just the reverse. We have gentrification, mm-hmm, which is people moving in, upgrading homes, increasing property values, which increases property taxes in the neighborhood, and all of a sudden lower income families can't afford those taxes. They have to move out, mm-hmm. and it becomes a gentrified community.
Right.
But this home has a historic nature to it, does
right,
it not?
Right.
And so obviously the first black family that moved into that mm-hmm. neighborhood, but there's other history behind this home, is there not?
Well, there's a secret history that you find out in the play, but
right.
but which I will allude to, but don't want to get too much. But
right. No spoilers
right,
here.
Right. But the woman who wants to prevent the house from being torn down, she because her aunt lived here, her great aunt lived here.
Right.
She actually climbed the tree in the backyard many times years in this, and has a personal connection to it. Plus, she wants to preserve the fact that this was the first home bought by a black family in this
right.
neighborhood. So she wants to prevent it from being torn down. Whereas the new family at first wanted to preserve it because they respected that, but it was going to be too difficult for them to and unsafe. So
okay, and Kelly, who do you play in this? Do you get to speak in this half of the play?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay, cool. That's kind of nice.
Yes, I play Lindsay, married to Steve. Steve played Carl in Act One, and this character, in my opinion, is a bit holier than thou. She wants to make a good impression on the other parties that are involved in the process. And I think she's more in love with the potential of the neighborhood
right.
and the potential of her husband, the potential of her unborn child, than she is with the reality of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But she wants to come across as a good person. And so she kind of vacillates between supporting her husband and throwing him under the bus to exonerate herself. but she really just wants to placate everyone else involved. And I'm just going to blame it on the pregnancy hormones.
Okay. Well, there you go. So living to please the rest of the world and living in the future rather than the present.
Exactly.
Yeah. That tends to be a problem because the present will catch up with you real quick. So give us an idea of the stage design for this. We got fancy TVs and everything.
Oh, no.
Still minimalist.
Minimalist, and the energy that comes out of the cast is more than enough to carry the show itself. I personally think this could probably be done on a bare stage, and we could get away with that because the evolution of the story, the evolution of the characters, and the highlighting of social issues are extremely powerful in
right.
this play. It's been a joy to watch the cast develop these different persona that they had to develop. And some of this is uncomfortable.
Right.
You know, some of the messages are uncomfortable.
These are adult themes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think
themes we're wrestling with right now in America.
To this very day. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what really carries the energy. Now, of course, we want it to look a little different. It's older, again, with the moving in and out.
Right.
So there aren't a lot of set pieces. There aren't a lot of there's not a lot of decoration around. But we want to change the mood with the lighting a little. Little bit in the second act, and it was a lot easier to put costumes on everybody from 2009 than 1959.
trying to find a poodle dress has got to be hard these days.
Oh, let me tell you something. The one that we're still having a little trouble with is the got to go back in time to the Korean era of an army uniform.
Oh, okay.
And try putting your hands on that stuff.
Yeah, Korean War era army uniform. Yeah, I probably have one in my closet.
But I need to talk to you after this.
So one of the parallels between Act One and Act Two is kind of the fact that in the first act you have the families moving out, so most of the furniture and things have been removed by the time you see the play opens. And the second act, because it's an abandoned home, there's just a makeshift furniture there. So we're kind of building on the minimalist building of the script in a sense.
Now, how long has this home been abandoned? Then is it really in ramshackle shape, or has it only been abandoned for a few years and a broken window here or there?
Pretty ramshackle.
Okay, so it's pretty busted. It down, so really you can do that with a couple of loose boards.
Yeah, the we've got a since Don has put those nice cross pieces over the set. I was, in fact, just as we were waiting to go on the show, I talked to Robert and I said, "Now wait a minute, if this is supposed to be ramshackle, and I'm thinking you get the right light, you got shadows across the walls, and really change just a few little minor changes in the lighting,
right.
and you'll get that idea of empty warehouse kind of
right, a bleaker mm-hmm. emptiness, you know, right. A broken down emptiness yeah. with that hollow sound mm-hmm. that you get from an empty home, you know, correct. With no carpet or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So now this play has amassed quite an astounding collection of awards.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a few of those?
Well, and the American ones are won the Tony Award. You know, the Tonys are the leading awards for Broadway, so it won the Tony Award for Best Play. It also won the Pulitzer Prize for Best Drama that year. So it actually debuted in 2009, the year that it's set in.
Right.
And also award the Olivia Awards for playwriting as well. So it's a pretty acclaimed play, very controversial, but also very rewarding. And working on it, we've discovered there's a lot of parallels that you weren't aware of until you really start digging into right. it, and a lot of richness in terms of the themes being repeated and irony and yeah.
Can you give us a little bit about Bruce Norris, who is the author of this?
One of his things is to do social issues, so a lot of his plays deal with social issues. And one of the things that he does in a lot of his plays, which is very strong in this play, is a real lots of twists and turns between comedy and drama, between being really, really funny and really sad and very sweet sometimes, and then something very, very a gut punch sometimes too.
Right.
So just emotionally, it's a roller coaster, and that's really one of his signature works.
And what was it that I guess prompted him? And you may not have the answer for this to write what he calls a sequel or mm-hmm. a spinoff of mm-hmm. Raisin in the Sun. 50 some years later.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's I guess you call it maybe an homage to Raising the Sun, but I think just basically being from Chicago and just wanting to deal with those issues and the idea of an iconic play and the whole things about how things have changed over the years and how one neighborhood can go from being a German and Irish neighborhood to an African American neighborhood and then back to, again to now this kind of, I guess, I don't know what the 21st century name for yuppies is,
yuppies. Yeah.
So they talk about Whole Foods and that kind of thing as the icons.
The farmers market whole grain cereal and things
Starbucks.
Like that.
Yeah.
$4.50 coffee.
Right.
Yeah. So let's go through the actors that are going to be playing mm-hmm. the roles and mm-hmm. give us a little bit about them. Kelly, I'm going to start with you. Could you tell us about some of the actors?
So we have T.D. Harris. Playing Francine and Lena, and she is married to Eli Williams, who plays Albert and Kevin.
Okay.
And then
T.D. is, we have three people who are alumni of LSU Shreveport. So T.D. Harris and Grady Devine and Hannah Sprawls are all alumni of LSU Shreveport, and they've done shows at LSU. James Palmer actually went to Northwestern University, but he's actually done about 7 or 8 shows at LSU as well. And then we have Eli Williams, a centenary student, and then Kelly works for the Diocese of Shreveport. And then Troy Compass is a drama teacher in DeSoto Parish.
Okay. So give us, in Act One, who do each of these people play so that we can get an idea of who their characters are?
So Troy plays the father who was selling the house in the Act One.
Okay.
And then in Act Two, he plays a construction worker. So he's got the major role in the first act and probably the smallest role in the second act. So and kind of a reverse of Kelly's situation where she has a few lines in the first act because she's hearing impaired and a major role in the second act. So then I said T.D. Harris plays Francine, who's the maid for the family in the first act. Albert plays her husband, who comes by to pick her up at the end of her day shift.
Mm-hmm.
James Palmer plays Carl Lindner, the one character from Raising the Sun in the first act. And then Steve, the owner of the house in the second act. And then, of course, Kelly plays Lindsay, who is his wife. And they have both married couples in the play. Mm-hmm. All three married couples in the play have very contentious relationships as well. So actually, gender relations along with race relations is another major theme of the play. So you see all of them having tensions. Sometimes they're on each other's side, sometimes they're not, and that switches back and forth.
So in 1959, it's be silent and be here, and in 2009, it's don't tell me to be silent.
Well, kind of, you you get both in both acts, but okay. more in the 2009 obviously than you do in
Right, exactly.
More suffering silently, but there's enough contention in the first act as well.
Okay,
I've got to throw in a little technical note here that it is also worthy of note that every one of these actors and actresses have volunteered their time to help put up the set, build the platforms that are being used. T has helped me with the lighting. KJ helped me with the lighting. I believe she's from Centenary. Mm-hmm. So it has really been a cast of extreme talent.
Right.
You know, they don't mind coming out and helping with physical labor and then still focusing on their lines. And I think that has always been something that's been near and dear to my heart, is cast members that understand that there's
more to it.
Right. There's a physical side of that production besides the emotional and mental side. And my hat's off to every single one of them. They've worked themselves pretty much to the bone on this one.
Right. It's been a labor of love.
Yeah. And that's usually what good theater is a labor of love.
The two people I didn't mention are Hannah Sprawls. She plays the homemaker, the housewife in the first act, and then in the second act she plays a lawyer. Okay. And then the Grady Savant, who plays three roles, one of which I won't talk about anymore, but the first one, he plays a minister in the first act and then a lawyer as well. So there's lawyers. The second act is contentious. Again, you don't find out what the real crux is till halfway through, but there are lawyers representing each side, and so it gets more and more contentious. Both acts, basically, you know, the relationships fall apart, and there's a lot of fighting at the end of both acts, but even more so in the second act.
And although we're not going to go into it for the audience out there listening, there is a coda at the end of this play, which brings a little more depth of understanding to all of these characters and what's transpiring in their lives and why their reactions are the way they are, so that you get a fuller perspective, I guess, on who these people are, and a fuller emotional understanding of their humanity, really, and all the things that drive them. So who are your sponsors for this production?
Well, again, like you said, it's a co-production between the Drama Club at LSU Shreveport and Centenary College Department of Theater and Mahogany Ensemble Theater. But we also have a grant for the production from the Louisiana Division of the Arts and the Louisiana State Arts Council and the Shreveport Regional Arts Council. So where a good base for our funding comes from.
Okay. And how about showtimes, and how do folks get tickets?
They can call my number, which is 797-5283, or they can email me, robert.alford@lsus.edu, to get to the tickets, or they can to reserve the tickets. And then it'll be a will call. And we also have, it's general admission. So, and then the dates are going to be the 10th and the 12th, as well as the 17th, 18th, and 19th. So it's this Friday and at 8 o'clock, and this Sunday at 2, and the following Friday and Saturday at 8 o'clock, and that Sunday at 2. So five performances altogether.
All right. Any final thoughts anybody would like to share about this?
Got to come out and find out the ending of this play.
There you go. Yeah. The coda is the key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very funny play and very, very touching, and also it will shake people up too in some ways because like I said, it brings up a lot of themes. I mean, it deals with, in a sense, loss and the way sometimes people can use ugliness to get what they want.
Right. Yeah.
But also, there's some sweetness to it as well.
Yeah.
It's very intricate, so you should probably go ahead and buy two tickets so you can see it at least twice.
We also have discussions. Because of the grant, we'll have some discussions after the show with the audience.
Okay. All right. Great. That's excellent. So, well, Robert, Mary, and Kelly, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
That was director Robert Alford, an associate professor of media at LSUS, along with Mary Jarzabek, who directs the lighting and costume design for this production, and Kelly Vaden, who is going to play Becky in Act 1 and Lindsay in Act 2 of Clyburn Park, a play in two acts by Bruce Norris. And this production features the Drama Club at LSU Shreveport, Centenary College's Department of Theater, and the Mahogany Ensemble Theater. The production opens this Friday night at 8 p.m. at the Marjorie Lyons Playhouse, with performances this Sunday at 2, and then next weekend, August 17th, 18th, and 19th, at 8 p.m. on the 17th and 18th, 2 p.m. on the 19th. For complete details and ticket information, you can call 318-797-5283. That's 318-797-5283. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.